And welcome. You are listening to this edition of the KKFI Arts Magazine show. I'm Michael Hogue, your host. Welcome, and thank you for dropping by. It's a very nice Monday morning in the city as you listen to the Arts Magazine show right here on KKFI. 90.1 FM, your community radio station. Right here in Kansas City, lots going on in the arts community. Lots of things we could cover. We had to narrow it down to two things this week, and we're going to bring them your way during the course of the next hour. The Kansas City Repertory Theater has opened and is in the process of the run of The Fantastics, a story about love, interfering parents, lots of things of that nature. Some great songs, though, and we'll talk about that during the interview. Peggy Friesen is with us. She is a performer who has performed in the Kansas City area and beyond, I guess would be a good way to say it, for over 25 years.
Yeah.
Probably at least 25 years
at
that one particular
years.
Show.
At least 25 years.
50 productions at the Rep now. Is that accurate?
Yeah. I think so, yeah.
I've been doing research, and it always hasn't been accurate this week.
Yeah,
so
yeah.
50%.
Actually, you know, if you reach 75, you get your ashes are interred within the theater building. That's what I read. That's,
oh,
the,
yeah?
That's the theory,
okay,
yeah.
Okay, well, I'm not that age.
Okay, there you go.
Well, not,
25 more. 25 more shows. 25 more shows.
50 productions at the Rep. Boy, but a lot of them were the Christmas Carol. You've done that for...
Some were Christmas Carol, yeah.
Well, I know you've done others. But,
yeah. I've done Christmas Carol for 30 years, actually. Yes.
30 years with the Christmas Carol. Wow. Well, nice to be back. She also has done films. Well, she has appeared in films of Robert Altman, Steven Soderbergh, Ang Lee, all around. Got a, and she's also a professional harpist.
That's right.
Now, several years ago, she brought a CD of her harp. I keep thinking, I'm going to play one of those numbers one of this time, but we always try. But sooner or later, we will get to that.
Okay. But it's a Christmas album, so save it for Christmas Carol or something.
We will do that. Andrew Varela is with us as well.
Well done.
He is in the show. He has appeared on Broadway in King David, Les Miserables, the musical version of Little Women, toured with Evita, the Stephen Foster story as well. You always laugh at that.
I know. I just, it's amazing that that's the one you pick. You know what? Because I did the Stephen Foster, but that was an outdoor drama.
Uh-huh.
That was so that's, you know, theater with all the heat and bugs and everything like that. But I did that for a few summers. But that's so funny that that's there. Right after that, Les Mis is someplace in there, too.
Yeah.
You know?
Well, that was for the on Broadway.
No, I did it on the road, too. And Phantom of the Opera on the road, too. So I've been through Kansas City about a half a dozen times with tours.
Yeah. You also have some television and film credits. I guess the only one that they had was accurate, you can't trust the internet, All My Children. Appeared a few times on All My Children as well. They also had a list of films that he never appeared in.
It's amazing. I'm still, you know what, I'm tempted to put them on my resume. Just so you can check IMDb. It's totally there. It's totally there.
But the interesting thing was it checked out because the actor that appeared in these movies was married to your wife.
He's married to my wife. So when we go home, we're going to talk about this and see what it is. I just want to know where the rent checks have been. So, you know, where that guy is, he owes me money.
That's right. He probably does. Probably a lot of money. The longest running musical in off-Broadway history?
That's right.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's a story about love. That's what they always say.
Mm-hmm.
Fantastics is a story about love with many wonderful love songs in the show.
Well, it's a fable. It's a fable. It's love. It's also love going away and love coming back. Yeah,
it's interfering parents.
Mm-hmm.
You familiar with that?
Mm-hmm.
I guess we're all familiar with that to some degree or another. Tell us about some of the wonderful songs in the show. Who wants to tackle that one?
Well, I think you need to.
Well, okay. No, I mean, you know, it's just one of those. It has one of those. Those scores that it's just it'll keep you up at night, you know, because it's so beautiful from the overture. I know the overture keeps me awake at night, just running it through my head because it's so beautiful. And one of the interesting things about it is that the score was originally written for just piano and harp, which is fascinating, which gives it its own kind of character, its own flavor, its own color that's unique in music theater entirely. And, you know, and Peggy's played it. You've played the show before.
I've done maybe six productions of this show playing the harp. And this production, I'm not playing the harp. Although my harp,
you
is
are
not
using your match. Harp. Yeah, your harp is
the harpist that we brought from California.
Where they all come from, right?
Yes,
that's
right.
Central
right.
To all harping.
There's no harpist available to do it here in Kansas City. So, We had to go to California, and Brian Noel is playing my harp on stage, and he's delightful.
It's beautiful because it adds this really unique quality to all of this beautiful music.
Lush.
Yeah, lush. Right, exactly. And it's like angels are singing right in the middle of these numbers. We have a great group of guys in the band.
Anthony Edwards is our musical director.
The great one.
Yeah,
wonderful.
He's a trip. But the music, we have Try to Remember, which is, it's hard not to sing it like Goulet sometimes when I'm up there. You know, try. I don't know if that's good. Pretty good, I think so. But then there's the Soon It's Gonna Rain. Plant a Radish, which is kind
my
of a,
favorite.
It's totally a lot of fun, and it's just as a piece of theater, it's just so special, and you can see why it's had such a long run in New York and across the world.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, lots of high schools try to do it. I say try. I don't want to be unkind, but lots of high school
productions. Just right there, you were right there. That was really rough. Sorry, the kids are not satisfying your vision.
But those songs have to be hard to do.
They are. It's interesting because I did the role. I played El Gallo in the show, kind of a narrator / bad guy. And I did it, for the first time, I did it 12 years ago when I was the father to a very small child. And it's interesting because when the opportunity came up to do it this time, I really wanted to do it because I had sort of an important 12 years of living between then and now. And I was interested to see where it would take the character, where it would take my choices. And it's been really a lot of fun, really interesting, really eye-opening, and a nice exploration of my own life. So
you travel around the country doing shows?
Yeah, I have. I have. I've been in every state except Alaska.
Wow.
Yeah. And, crossing my fingers for Guam next. It's a great life. I mean, when my son was younger, we had him on the road for a full year with Little Women, and he was a baby. But, when we're like, oh, my God, what were we thinking, taking him out on the road with us? But we have pictures of him at the St. Louis Arch and the Washington Monument and, the Grand Canyon. And it kind of adds a really special way for him to grow up. It's pretty unique. It's very funny. I was thinking today, I'll tell you what. That boy knows which end of a hotel key card goes in the door. He doesn't have to do it twice. He knows how it goes. I saw him do that today, so that's funny.
A really good job with that. Yeah. Well, let's talk about the show. For those who aren't familiar with the plot line, what character do you play, Peggy, and how does she fit into the show?
It's not a she. It's a he. I play Henry, who is an old actor, kind of down on his luck. Henry and Mortimer appear a couple times in the show as being the actors that they are hired to be to help the fathers and El Gallo do their bidding. And we're the comic relief, and unfortunately we don't do huge songs or anything. But it's a blast. Merle Moores and I are mm-hmm. playing Henry and Mortimer, and
they're so wonderful.
You must come see us, because it's usually these roles are usually played by men, and
yes.
I've never known women to play these roles, mm-hmm. and it's quite a challenge. And it's just we're having a blast. It's wonderful.
Oh, I'm sure you are. Yeah, both attractive-looking women. I've known her husband for a long time.
Dirty guy. Okay.
We change completely. Yeah, wigs, makeup.
They're adorable in the show. Adorable.
Adorable.
They really are. No, they do such a great job.
A couple of guys.
You know what? She gets she gets entrance and exit applause. She's the only character in the show that gets that. It's set up so perfectly. It's got to be a dream to just get out there and just do all the funny stuff.
All the years that I've done Fantastics, playing the harp and watching it, Henry is my favorite role. And when Jerry Giannacchio asked me to play this role, I just jumped at the chance. I said, really? You want me to play Henry? Oh, it's a dream come true. It's wonderful. I'm having so much fun.
Well, and you and Merle work so well together anyway.
We are.
In past shows you have.
Yeah, we are quite a pair in this. I love working with Merle. She's just wonderful. Yeah.
Yeah.
She's such a sweetheart, too.
Lots of... It's a show of... Well, you mentioned the fathers. Mm-hmm. You have this romance and you have the fathers. You might tell the audience how all of that works.
Well, the children, when it begins, the show is ostensibly about these two kids, a boy and a girl, who live on either side of a wall that keeps them from being able to express their love in like a Romeo and Juliet kind of thing. But then, you know, halfway through the first act, we realize the fathers built the wall themselves to get the kids to want to meet each other. They wanted the children to fall in love. And the wall is an expression of the song that we have Never Say No, where the kids will always do the exact thing you ask them not to. So the fathers say, do not get involved with that boy, do not get involved with that girl, and that's exactly what they do. So that's, spoiler alert, that's exactly what it's about. That's how this love story begins. And it's so unbelievably sweet and precious, but... The show has like an Into the Woods turn at for the second act.
Yeah,
and
it's dark.
Yeah, it gets dark, but it shows you life. It shows you love as a child, and it shows you love as an adult. And I think it does it so beautifully with music and just with such a delightful story that it makes it such a great evening.
Yeah, that and some of those wonderful songs you mentioned. Some
yeah,
of them
yeah. It's, there is no way you won't leave humming everything in the show. It's remarkable.
This is the kind of show where some people all know the songs, even if they don't know what show it came from.
The drinking on that one there, Bob.
Oh, yeah. Well, you mentioned Mr. Goulet earlier. Uh-huh. Yeah, it was such a great voice.
Right.
And I guess when he died, he was awaiting a lung transplant.
Okay.
It's true.
Yes, yes, it is. That, we didn't that we don't bring that up in the show though. That doesn't make its way into the love story.
No.
Somebody needing a lung transplant.
But actually,
no, he did though.
What a powerful voice.
Yeah, so it's ironic as well.
Irony is the. Right.
I'm sure. I'm sure he thought that every day, like son of a gun, needing a lung.
Oh, okay.
Bob Goulet.
Oh. A powerful voice. I remember seeing him in the one they did at the one downtown many years ago, late 60s. Came into town. But you know, in person, even he was quite a powerful voice.
Mm-hmm.
We're speaking with Peggy Friesen and Andrew Varela. They're here to talk about the Kansas City Repertory production of The Fantastics. It will run, I guess performances will pick up again tomorrow night. You have today off.
Yes, we do.
Yeah. March 29th through April the 10th at the Spencer Theater on the campus of UMKC, 4949 Cherry is the address if you MapQuest things. The zip code is 64110. You can go on their website for more information, kcrep.org, or you can call their ticket office at 816-235-2700 for the Fantastics. What have the reactions been like from the audience so far?
Oh, they've been delightful. They've been delightful. And I should mention, too, that if you do want tickets, there are two different places you can sit. You can sit right on stage.
Oh, yeah. The
There's staging, a section yeah. on stage where you can see very up close the action,
mm-hmm.
Or you can sit out in the regular house. So it's sort of in the round,
mm-hmm.
And it's a delightful set. It's just mm-hmm. gorgeous.
So do you like having people that close to you, Peggy?
Oh, yeah. Yes. And Henry does, too. Henry likes to use the people right there.
Yeah.
Yeah,
they are super close, though.
Okay.
They are right there.
Well, there's been some shows with unique staging in the last few years.
Yes, yes. And this is one of them, yeah.
Yeah, was the one
Carousel was in the
yes.
round. Also, Cabaret. And this one is sort of is pretty much in the round too.
Mm-hmm.
And Cabaret, the Kit Kat Club patrons were right up there on stage.
Right, right.
Yeah.
They had tables there. Yeah.
Yeah. Do you think you connect with the audience better if you're like 3 feet away?
Well, I certainly can see them better. but yeah, that's true. And a lot of people like that. Some people coming to see a play don't want to be right there and want to sit back. And there are good seats all around. So keep that in mind.
Sure. Was this a director's idea, or is this version written for that kind of stage?
No, it's not written for that kind of stage.
It's Jerry.
Jerry Giannacchio and his designers decided to do it this way. The orchestra also has their own little stage to the side, so they're right up close as well.
Yeah, for years the Rep didn't do musicals, but in recent years,
I think there's kind of a natural prejudice against musicals from a lot of theater companies. I just knew that in New York there's a very definite line between the actors who did musicals and the actors who did straight plays. But I think that places like the Rep here, where they're taking musicals in a new direction and you're seeing really interesting presentations of them, that's the beauty of theater, because you can take these pieces that are however old they are, you know, telling whatever story from whatever time, and using today's technologies and today's theater stagecraft, and you can tell a really compelling story with projections instead of like drops that drop down behind you or something like that. And the sound systems are better. Mm-hmm. It's really fascinating that the what you can do. I mean, you probably couldn't have, if you didn't, you know, you probably could not have done Fantastics without amplification on a harp, because they're fairly quiet, right? So, I mean, you have all of these new elements that because of technology, you can enjoy theater in a new way. And I think that in the YouTube world, being able to see something becomes the unique experience. Being able to experience something in person is what's different, as opposed to seeing it on your phone, you know, on the subway.
Yeah. Well, people get in there and they get right up close.
They do. They're
part of the experience.
Oh, closer than you want to be sometimes. Trust me, you are right up in it. I can imagine. You know, we have a big stage flap in the show, and the people that are, you know, 10 feet from it are like, oh boy, it can be unnerving to witness people going through struggles that close.
Mm-hmm. Sure enough. Usually in musicals, there's a big cast. So how did Jerry do it for this one?
Well, there are eight people?
Eight people. Eight of the finest actors you will ever know.
And some non-singers, like Merle and I, are in the musical. So it's
haven't I seen you sing in anything before? I think I have. Haven't I?
No.
No?
No, not really.
I've never.
Not really.
Okay.
I don't, you know, I'm not, I'm one of those actors that doesn't do musicals, usually.
Well, that all changes now.
Yeah,
that all changes now, Peggy.
I'm waiting to call.
Breaking down your door.
The Fantastics will be prominently featured on your resume.
I'm thinking Sound of Music's coming down the pike for you, Fräulein Maria. You heard me.
Nobody solves a problem like you guys.
You know what? I look at you, you're a Flipperty Gibbet. Oh, yeah.
How many musicals have you done? I'll bet a bunch. Looking at your resume, I saw quite a few.
Yeah, no, I mean that's been the bulk of my career is just musicals. So, I love doing plays. I'm really interested in exploring these kind of archetypal characters, and putting my own take on it. And that's what Jerry did, was starting the rehearsal process on this, because you saw how many different things he wanted to do with us, whether it's non-traditional casting or this theater in the round that we're doing this piece. Being able to, as an actor, one of the thing that you have that is yours alone is your opinion. And Jerry created a really fail-safe atmosphere that was just tons of fun in rehearsal. And he's been so supportive, and everybody gets to do what they're good at and gets to have their opinion on the stage. And he never forced himself. He was just, it was a very open experience when putting the show together. And Richard Hines, or RJ, as we call him.
Ricky, as I call him.
he's moving away from Ricky. He's going to RJ. But he has such wonderful choreography in this as well, that it's so detailed and it's so creative that he has a big future for himself, because it's so enjoyable to watch the things that he's choreographed in here, and so beautiful.
Yeah. Well, it's beautiful music.
Yeah.
No question about that. If you folks go, you'll remember the songs. Like I said earlier, I have a lot of people tell me, so that song is from that musical. I didn't make that connection, and that seems odd to me, but it makes sense.
You know, and being as a piece written in the 50s, the music does not sound dated one bit. It doesn't sound dated one bit. It actually sounds very, very advanced, very contemporary, which is
remarkable. Let me tell you about the music, though. Having played it instrumentally, it's not easy music.
Yeah.
It's very complicated and not quite as difficult as Sondheim or something, but I just love the music. It's written very well and holds up.
It really does hold up. It really does hold up.
And will continue to hold up for another 50 years. Yeah.
Oh, sure. Yeah. How did you end up being in this show? Is there a story to that?
Oh, my goodness. There actually is. I was a last-minute hire. And I'm so grateful that they found me and brought me in here. I love Kansas City. I love working here. I think the Rep is a great resource. It's a great cultural resource to have. And their expansion into the Copacan stage, I think, downtown, I think is fantastic. It's a great organization. Eric Rosen is a visionary. You know, he's so excited about theater. He's so excited to do classics, but in a new way. I think people should be very pleased to have a resource like Casey Rep here. It's so incredible.
Yeah, well, the unique thing that they've done is that sometimes the shows are taken out of their original environment.
Mm-hmm.
You have some of the shows are downtown at Copacan. There was a show that opened this season at the Museum of Art, the Nelson Atkins Museum of Art.
Yes,
a show
was
performed there.
Really?
As well.
What did we do? Oh, Sunday in the Park with
you? Yeah, the painting that's in Chicago.
You did Sunday in the Park
at the
museum?
At the Nelson
Gallery. Oh, that's amazing. That's so fantastic.
It was gorgeous.
Oh, it's got to be. What a great idea.
And what a great fit that was.
Well, and of course, they had to do it somewhere because the Rep was under construction.
Oh.
Spencer Theater, the theater, and we have a new lobby. It's just gorgeous. You need to see
it. Yeah, it really is.
Oh, if you haven't visited since they opened the refurbishing, shall we say. You should do that. See what they've done with the place.
Yeah.
Doesn't look the same. If you liked it the old way, I hope you took pictures. Because it looks a lot different now.
Well, it's nice. It's nice. It's open. It's a little bit bigger. It's open.
Plenty of parking, which is always nice.
Yeah. Oh, plenty of parking there.
And there's a bar at intermission.
That
factors in.
It's very important for some people.
Seriously. Certainly for me.
Right. It's a nice bar. You can walk all the way around it, too. It's great.
Is that important? You like that?
I like that.
You like circumnavigating the bar?
Right. All the way around.
Oh, yeah.
The longest running musical in off-Broadway history. And every time you look the show up and all the captions, it always says, a story about love.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I guess interfering parents, kind of a story that has survived many years and many generations.
Yeah.
And things like that.
It's a story with gravitas. It's a story with heft. It's a story with real heart. But it's ultimately the same story that we've always heard, you know, and it's just, again, it's so amazing to think that how well written and how beautifully constructed the whole show is, you know.
Performances will pick up on Tuesday evening. Now, during the week at 7:30 Friday and Saturday it's
7 o'clock. Is it 7:30?
You know what? I think you should check the website.
I think you should too. KCREP.org.
I left my brain at home. I shut off a couple of cylinders. I'm running on.
It's my day off.
It's a lawnmower.
Oh, sure. KCREP.org. I know. Usually during the week, the performances are a little earlier. They're 7 or 7:30. Mm-hmm. Then Friday, Saturday, it's usually 8. Right. Sunday afternoon, it's usually 2 o'clock. Yeah. But you check that website to make sure they've got it right. KCREP.org. And the number to call, the central ticket office number, right at UMKC, is 816-235-2700 to make your plans to see the Fantastics. It'll run through April the 10th, a nice long run. Are you settled in?
Oh, God, yes, I am. You know, now it just sort of runs away. Now the time just falls through your fingers, you know, at this point in the run of a show.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I guess once you've got everything down, the rehearsal process is through.
You just have to, you know, well, I'm going to museums. Like going to the World War One Museum. I love that place. I'm just going to hang out there for a day. That's my thing.
It was Actors Theater, I guess, that did a couple of shows at the World War One Museum.
Yeah.
I like the way the theaters are going to places.
I think that's a fantastic idea. Yeah. I really do.
You saw World War One play. In fact, there's been two.
There's been
two wars. Yes,
yeah.
Certainly.
In a World War One museum where there is an actual auditorium and do the shows there.
Yeah.
It's very innovative what they're doing.
It's really great that all of your different cultural outlets are kind of finding synergies for their stuff. Because, I mean, that's really exciting. That's what you can do. And frankly, that's what people in arts need to do. They need to pull together and do these interesting pieces, you know?
Yes. Yes, I agree. It all kind of fits together. Mm-hmm. To see a World War One themed play in a World War One museum. In fact, the only World War One museum in the country, I guess.
I guess,
at this point. Yeah.
Well, at least I think
Second World War gets all the press, you know.
I mean, it really does.
You never,
the personalities were bigger.
Here we go again.
The personalities were bigger. Fantastics continues its run tomorrow night through April 10th at the Spencer Theater on the campus of UMKC. The number to call for more information is 816-235-2700 or on the web at kcrep.org. I want to thank my guests for being with us and telling us all about the Fantastics. Peggy Friesen, Kansas City area and beyond for 25 years, 30 years
Robbie
with the rest.
Yeah.
Andrew Varela, Stephen Foster story. I guess he's not happy with the story.
No, I love it. I'm so pleased.
Well, I'll do the Broadway credits then. King David, Les Miserables, and the musical version of Little Women, which I've never seen. Is that good?
No, it's great. That's great. And Sunday in the Park with George.
Sunday in the Park with George as well. Thanks so much for being with us.
Okay, thank you.
We're going to take a break. When we return, we're going to talk to the artistic director of the Kansas City Ballet. He's going to talk about their new project they have going on. It's called New Moves. When we return, you're listening to the Arts Magazine radio program right here on KKFI. 90.1 FM. And welcome back to the Arts Magazine show right here on KKFI 90.1 FM, your community radio station right here in Kansas City. I'm Michael Hogue, your host, part of the Arts Lineup here on KKFI. We have Arts Magazine at noon on Mondays. We have Arts Speak Radio at noon on Wednesdays. Occasionally, some of the other shows will have guests from the arts community as well. All here to help you understand and be aware of, mostly be aware of all of the arts that are going on in this community. No one can say they weren't aware. If you tune in to 90.1 FM KKFI, as we will bring these things along your way and tell you all about them, give you an idea of what you're going to be seeing and let you make the choice of what you would like to do here on the Arts Lineup here on KKFI. For instance, today, you know, we talked to the rep during the first half hour of the show. An old friend has come back to talk to us in the second half. Devin Carney, the artistic director of the Kansas City Ballet, is with us. The ballet does some innovative things. They do all the classic shows. Over the years, you've seen most of the classic ballets done, but they also do some innovative things as well. They have a show that will open this Friday, April 1st. Performances continue for after that. But they are doing a show called New Moves, kind of a definition of perhaps works that haven't been seen before, Devin, things of that nature.
I really appreciate the time. It's great to have a chance to talk about what we're up to at Kansas City Ballet. Always a pleasure to be here.
I guess I should have done a little more of an introduction.
No,
I guess you
did. You did a great introduction.
Oh, no.
We just dove in.
You started in New Orleans, and the music down there. It's been in Boston, Cincinnati, and down here. And
been around a bit.
And now he's doing innovative things now with the Kansas City Ballet. And New Moves opens this Friday.
Right. New Moves is a really exciting program. First of all, it's a program that's performed not in our home theater, which is the Kauffman Center for Performing Arts, but it's performed in the Michael and Ginger Frost Theater, which is within our Bollinger Center for Dance and Creativity building, where we rehearse every day to prepare for our large productions. It's a fabulous theater that we perform in for this particular production. It's the only production we do in this theater because it's a very intimate setting. It's very up close. They're very, you know, the seats are limited, so obviously, you know, if you want to come and see this program, you want to get your tickets pretty quick because there's 180 seats in the house, and we're doing six shows, and they sell out real quick.
I'll bet they do.
They do. So it's a really cool setting. It's very much a unique environment for dance because you are seeing dance quite close, much closer than you ever would see it at the Kauffman Center. You know, there's that kind of distance with the edge of the stage, and then you've got the orchestra pit, and then you finally have that first row, which is, it's about, let's say, 15 to 20 feet away from you. So there's this barrier, this kind of invisible fourth dimension, if you want to call it, that is very much kind of insulating the audience from really the physicality of what's going on stage. You know, like you can't really hear people breathing on the Kauffman Center stage, but in the Michael and Ginger Frost Theater at the Bollinger Center, boy, you hear every breath. I mean, and choreographers actually use that intimacy, and the use of breath is actually quite interesting to have that incorporated into choreography, to actually hear a dancer go, you know, and not have music, just to hear that breath is really kind of cool. But this production, it's an opportunity, Michael, because when you get on the big stage, you know, you have to make sure that you're presenting works that are going to be fairly financially successful. But with New Moves, it's an opportunity to really kind of throw caution to the wind and just let's see what some new emerging choreographers have got up their sleeve. What are their talents really like? And it's this chance where I get to look across the country and try to identify emerging choreographers that haven't quite got a name yet out there. Yes, they've had some minor track record in terms of creating works on some companies or schools or whatever it might be, small dance ensembles. But they've never really had a chance to work with professional dancers of the caliber that Kansas City Ballet has.
Mm-hmm.
And this is an opportunity to identify those choreographers and pair them up with our amazing dancers and give them some space, you know, a couple of weeks to create a short work. There are six pieces on the program. And they are all somewhere between 6 to 10 minutes long, each one of them. So it's very much a diverse programming. It's all world premieres, Michael. There's nothing on the program that's ever been before seen, which is quite exciting that you can put six world premieres on one program. That in and of itself is one of my missions for New Moves, because to have new works created is only going to benefit the art form, because you know you can only do so many of the great classics for so long, or the contemporary masterpieces of works that have been done by many, many, many companies across the world. But it's getting out there in front, right out on the front edge of where's dance going. That's important, because without that continual discovery of what are the limits of dance and the way that we can express the human condition, how do we each see that, and what touches us as audience members? And each choreographer has their own unique voice, just like your voice pattern is very much yours and mine is mine. Choreographers have their own, no matter how much they might try to maybe emulate another choreographer, they are going to have their own voice. I call it a voice, a choreographic voice. And what's exciting is watching them discover their voice, their true inner choreographic voice. And that's what New Moves is about, giving young choreographers, and I don't mean that in age, because some choreographers don't start really choreographing till they're in their 40s. So it's just giving choreographers who haven't had a lot of experience that chance to really be adventurous.
Sure.
And you never know what's going to happen, Michael. You just never know what's going to happen in these shows. I really don't, because there's so much going on in our studios all at once. You've got, you know, six different works being prepared simultaneously, right? So it's you really don't really know exactly how the show's going to turn out until we get to the dress rehearsal, and you finally see them all in one room, all together, start from the beginning and go to the end, and you go, wow, what an assemblage of incredibly interesting works that we've got here on the program. And every year, you know, this is the third season for New Moves, and it's just gotten more and more interesting, and there's always wonderful surprises. We have one of the nice things that I'm really excited about this year, beyond just simply having awesome choreographers and beautiful dancers working with them, but we also have one of the works as being a collaboration that we're doing with University of Missouri Kansas City with their music department, and we're actually bringing over three of their highly accomplished students in their music department who are going to play live for one of the pieces for every show, which is really exciting to have that collaboration starting to happen with UMKC, thanks to Dean Peter Witte. Mm-hmm. It's been really exciting to see that coming together, frankly.
So you searched the country to find some of these emerging choreographers?
Yeah.
Now, is there a trend in dance choreography? Like, there's trends in other things? And I'll give the example I thought of. It seems to me, in some of the things I've seen over the last few years, some people are taking more of a personal approach to it. They'll do a piece that is based on perhaps something that happened in their life, a family member or something, and they'll work that into the presentation. At least as far as trends go, I see something like that.
Well, I think that, like I said, every choreographer's got their own voice, and I think that there are particular dance creators who are very much comfortable with, if you would call it, a narrative work where there's a story that they're trying to tell, even if it's very loose, but there is still an emotional content to it that maybe talks about a son's relationship to a father, or a very intimate relationship between a husband and a wife, or it might be two guys, it might be two girls. And interestingly enough, on this program this year, we have two works that are all men, for instance, and there are actually, you know, male duets that happen during this because there's only men in the show in that particular piece. So you just never know what someone's going to bring to the table. There are some choreographers like Andrew Skeels, beautiful and interesting guy who's on the program, comes from Canada. He's American, but he's been studied a lot in Canada and worked there, who recently actually just gave up his dance career because his choreographic career is starting to blossom.
Oh.
And it's really exciting to be right on the front edge of that discovery process with that choreographer. As he's just resigned from his company in Canada, actually turned down a full you know, year-long contract with a major company in Canada because he's gotten a couple of interesting commissions over the course of the season already. One's a three-month commission to rehearse, prepare, you know, create a piece in Paris. And another one was a six-week commission. And so you can see with those kind of length of time periods, he doesn't have a lot of time to be a dancer anymore.
Oh, sure.
And
So I guess that would be a decision to make.
Yeah, it's a tough one.
Especially if you're still able to perform at a top level.
Exactly. Yeah. So his work is very interesting. It's very unique. His is all about community and about the influence that one person has on a lot of other individuals. And that's why I call it community.
Sure.
One action is responded to by many. And it's really interesting to see how it's kind of that ripple effect, you know, that... And that's, what is it, 1 degree of separation?
You
do something, and then three people later it affects me.
Know,
and they're completely unrelated, each individual. So
that does happen.
Yeah.
That does happen.
So that's a really unique trend, his type of work. And there is a certain amount of individuals out there who are doing that kind of work where it's very little solo work. It's all... you know, group work, but it's also interesting group work where everybody's got their own thing they're doing, but they all interact. It's really quite fascinating to see his work. So, you know, there is some storyline in that kind of work, but not really. And others, you know, they're much more literal about something that's happened in their life. And honestly, that's the best thing you can do is take things that mean something to you as a choreographer and work those out in a movement format. That's because it's genuine that way. You know, you're not like trying to fake something, you know, uh-huh. put some sort of happy, let's do a happy pas de deux. And, you know, you just may have, you know, had a tragedy in your own life, you know. So I think that's always the beauty of choreography is that you capture a choreographer at a certain moment in their life and what they are experiencing outside of the rehearsal room and how they're being inspired. And they bring that into the rehearsal room and create very interesting works.
The arts in general does that.
Oh, yeah, doesn't it?
You tap into things that you didn't know was within you.
I know.
And you really can.
There's a couple of, musical original compositions on the program. One of the important things about this program is that we try to keep the costs fairly low, so the risks financially aren't that much, right? So, you know, I encourage choreographers to tap into the friendship network they have of composers that are willing to, who as well are individuals who are on the front edge of their careers. Stephanie Martinez, who's doing a work on the program, she comes from a Chicago area. And her work is an original composition by Daryl Hoffman, who's a graduate student at a university in the Chicago area that she happened to know, 21, 22-year-old person. And it's really an interesting work. And, you know, that there is also the issue of musical rights when you're choreographing, when you're doing live performance, you know, because you want to make sure that the musicians are, especially those that are more established, that, you know, they're being compensated for their work, even though they're not there personally. So, you know, what you try to do is, I try to do is find those emerging composers as well. And so two of the works are original compositions. Jennifer Archibald, who comes from New York City as well, her music is an original composition by two individuals, Michael Wall and Armand Amar. Again, very interesting work and also very affordable for me. Uh-huh. And those kind of collaborations are awesome because, again, I mean, I have no idea what the music's going to be until they show up because I ask them for find something original if you can. Ask your friends. I'm sure you've got friends who are composers. Let's see what you can do, you know. And it's really exciting to see what happens in those sort of circumstances where you get, you know, cross-discipline collaboration going on between musicians and choreographers and then, of course, dancers. So it's quite exciting.
It gives them a chance to have this showcase. And, and more important, I suppose, getting some audience reaction to things.
Oh, yeah, of course.
How can it be improved on without some reaction?
Well, of course. Yeah. That's always the best part about what we do. We are what they call a performing art, right?
Yeah.
So it's pretty useless to be doing it if there's not an audience there.
Yeah.
And the response is what's awesome. You know, that's for an artist, for a dancer, choreographer, musician. The audience response is that confirmation of, hey, that was a good work. That one. Uh-huh. Now this one we just did, that was cool. Did you hear halfway through how they applauded for this one section, or did you hear the gasp when that one lift occurred? Uh-huh. You know, and you kind of go, oh, so the next time you do something, you create something, whether it be musical or choreographically, you know, you kind of remember those things, so you build upon those experiences. So indeed, the audience does have a certain amount of influence on a choreographer's point of reference. And I love the audience for new moves because it is so close. I mean, it is really close, especially those first five or six rows. I mean, when the dancers turn, you might get hit with some sweat flying your way, you know. And it's exciting, you know, to see that. It's very, I call it very visceral experience because, you know, you see the muscles flexing. You see the contraction in the muscle formation. You hear their breathing, intense breathing, after they've just done a very difficult pas de deux and they're standing there in silence, you know, and something's about to happen. And you just hear them like, you can, you know, you're like, wow, they really did work, you know. Because for dancers, you know, one of the things that we try to do which is a bit deceiving, is make everything look easy, as opposed to sports.
Well, that's
where,
what you're supposed to do, John,
right?
You're supposed to make it look easy.
Right, but a lot of people don't really quite understand how difficult it is because of that. The elegance, the grace, the refinement that dancers have over the many, many years of being disciplined in how they react to the physical stress that they're under. So it's kind of exciting to be able to really get almost, and I'll say this, it's almost like you're on stage with the dancers in this performance.
Oh, sure.
Right there with them.
When you watch rehearsal, if ever any of you have the opportunity to watch an actual ballet dance rehearsal, quite rigorous.
Mm-hmm.
More rigorous than the actual performance.
Yeah, actually, Michael, that's a good point, because when we do a performance, for instance, you know, our performance for New Moves starts at 7:30. It'll be done by maybe 8:45, 9, right? At the most, 9. But a dancer's day, they start at 9:15 in the morning with a conditioning class that goes till 10:45. Then they go from 11 to 2. Then they get an hour to breathe, eat something, and then they turn around and come back and do 3 more hours, 3 to 6. So a rehearsal day consists of about 7.5 hours on their feet, physical exertion. So indeed, when we get to a performance, it's almost easier.
Sure.
But the beauty about the performances is that you get so jazzed up because of the audience, and you want to do your best. You really want to fire all cylinders, you know, and it's really exciting to see what happens in a performance as opposed to in a rehearsal. There's just that added element, that fifth element of the audience that makes such a big difference for dancers.
Well, yeah, just everything just gets moved up a couple of notches.
Oh, yeah.
You're all set to go with the actual audience there. Let's do some of the particulars before time gets away from us.
Oh, yeah.
Performances begin this Friday,
right?
April 1st.
Indeed it is.
It's going to be a lucky day.
Yeah, I know, right, exactly.
At 7:30
we're going to do it.
At 7:30 p.m., Friday, April 1st. Performances continue Saturday at 7:30 p.m. Then they get a few days off.
Right.
But I bet you they rehearse.
Oh, yeah,
that time.
That's true.
Even though they have two performances under their belt, I'll bet some of those choreographers will rehearse the people throughout the work as well. Performances will pick up again Thursday the 7th at 7:30, Friday the 8th at 7:30, and then the big day. So two performances on Saturday the 9th, 2 o'clock p.m., a couple of hours to rest, and then Saturday the 9th at 7:30 p.m., too. And that's where those long rehearsals come into play, to be able to do all that.
That's true.
Twice.
Yeah, double header. Yeah.
You have to be really in condition for all of that.
Yeah, and we've got six choreographers. Like I was mentioning just a couple of them, but I think it's important to let your audiences know the full roster of choreographers on the program. We have six choreographers. Three of them are actually Kansas City Ballet artists who are trying out being choreographers, maybe for the first time, or they've done several works, as well as three guests from out of town. And so there's Ryan Jolicoeur Nye, who is a company dancer, and then there's Sarah Chun, a company dancer, and there's Jennifer Archibald, who's the one who comes from New York City, has her own incredible performing arts group called Arch Dance out of New York City. And then there's Charles Martin, again, who's one of our fabulous company artists, and then Andrew Skeels, who we talked about, coming out of Canada, and then Stephanie Martinez, who comes from the Chicago area. So it's a really exciting lineup. And also we have a pre-show entertainment by our second company, a work created by Anthony Kruskamp that will be performed right before all this gets underway. So if you want to see that, you definitely want to be there a little early so that when we start right on time that you're there and comfortable and seated and ready to see some exciting dance over the course of the night.
And again, this time it's in the smaller, more intimate space.
Exactly.
Not in the Kauffman Center.
Right.
It's in the Todd Bolander Center for it's a long time.
Dance and Creativity.
For Dance and Creativity. As well, that is, in case you don't know, it's on Pershing, next to Union Station.
Right.
It's just west. So you turn down that street where you would go to park for Science City. Instead of going
left,
you hang a left, and you'll be at the parking lot of the Rehearsal Center, Creativity Center of the Kansas City Ballet. that's in that intimate setting, that's where these performances will be performed. The number to call for more information is 816-931-8993. Or, of course, as always, you can go online to see their website, kcballet.org. For more information on new moves, emerging choreographers of both the national dance scene and locally here within the ballet. Give them a chance to step in the ring and give it their best. Give it their best shot. Yeah, that's what they call. Yeah. And some of them, do people lobby you to do their
work? Yes. Oh, my goodness. These six names are, but, you know, I'd say this is about a quarter of the number of individuals that I interact with over the course of a season, and you know, are starting to you know, assemble a group of names to then draw from. So, you know, these are the ones that were available and that were most interesting, and would be an interesting combination of individuals on the same program too.
Sure. You never know, and
that's right.
In a few years, perhaps you might see some of these people doing works on a regular ballet schedule.
That's right.
Yeah. It's kind of a balance between the classic ballets, which you do.
Right.
You do all the classic ballets, but then you have a chance to do this.
That's right.
To learn of the emerging artists.
Yeah, and you know, all dancers, all artists start somewhere, and that's what's really exciting about this. You know, think of Van Gogh. You know, he was a kid. So was, you know, Monet. So was, you know, Dolly. You know, so was Mozart. You know, they all started with works that nobody knew about. We all know all their works now, right? But, you know, they were all young artists trying out their particular field. So it's really exciting to think that some of these choreographers could someday be the next choreographic Mozart. Yeah. And that we knew them when. You know?
Well, thanks for coming and telling us all about it. Coming up April 1st and 2nd, 7:30, Thursday the 7th, the 8th, both of those in the evening. Saturday, 2 in 1 day. Saturday the 9th at 2, and Saturday evening the 9th at 7:30 p.m. at the Todd Bolander Center for Dance and Creativity. It's on Pershing, just off Broadway, really, just west of Union Station. The number to call for more information, 816-931-8993, or online at kcballet.org. I want to thank my guest, Devin Carney, for coming again and telling us all about what they have planned.
Thank you, Michael.
It's epic. That's exciting for these young people.
It sure is.
It sure is.
Thank you.
Thanks so much for being with us.
Absolutely.
The Jazz Insider is coming up next. He's got some great things planned for you this afternoon. We'll have jazz from 1 to 3. We'll have the blues from 3 to 6 right here on your community radio station, 90.1 FM KKFI, Kansas City's community radio. So until next we meet, ladies and gentlemen, at that cross in the road, I'm Michael Hogue. We'll see you next.